Moscow, Idaho, Sunday, November 13th, 2022. We are never truly safe from predators. Every town, every neighborhood, every place on planet Earth is home to another man or woman who would rob, rape, or murder us if given the chance. You can lock all your doors, install the latest home security systems, and bar up as many windows as you like, but there is always someone, somewhere, lurking in the dark. Every life, every day, is in danger. And we are always at our most vulnerable when we are lying in bed asleep. As a species, human beings have an instinctive, primal nightmare of home invasion and being violently murdered at the hands of an unknown assailant. Sometimes it isn't just a dream. Sometimes nightmares become reality. The murder weapon often varies. It could be a gun, an axe, even a chainsaw. But more often than not, it's something as simple and deadly as a knife. A weapon of intense passion and brutality. When you are stabbing someone, it's close and in your face. The experience is more visceral and more intimate. It speaks of emotionality, whether homicidal rage or sexual arousal. Due to the phallic nature of the blade, stabbings almost always have a sexual connotation to them. In the early morning hours of November 13th, 2022, four University of Idaho college students were murdered in a shared rental home close to campus, in which three of them resided. They had all returned home roughly around 2 a.m. after partying at separate locations and had gone to bed. Just before dawn, a knife-wielding maniac broke into the residence. There were six people at home at the time. Police would later say there were no signs of forced entry, so the victims likely forgot to lock their doors. Unbeknownst to the victims, a predator had been stalking the house for months. He had waited 28 years for this. The time had come for him to act out his most depraved fantasies. In the darkness, the intruder crept up the stairs to the third floor where Kaylee Gonsalves and her lifelong best friend, Madison Mogan, both only 21 years of age, were in bed together. Both girls were brutally stabbed to death by the killer. It is unknown whether they were awake or asleep when they were attacked. Kaylee had injuries that were, according to police, significantly more brutal than her best friend who was slain in the same room. This savage and enraged killer used a 7-inch Rambo-style knife on both girls. The killer then continued his murderous rampage as he crept downstairs in the dark, going to the second floor, where he viciously stabbed Zanna Kernodle and her boyfriend, Ethan Chapin, both age 20, to death in their bed. Based on what we now know, it is believed the perpetrator murdered Ethan first, before turning his thirst for blood on Zanna. It is unknown whether they were awake or not when they were attacked. What is known is one of the victims was found with defensive wounds. The two other female students who lived at the house on King Road, who we are going to call BF and DM, were both left unharmed and survived. DM stated she was awoken at approximately 4 a.m. by what she stated sounded like Kaylee playing with her dog in one of the upstairs bedrooms. It was most likely the killer corralling the dog in her room so the animal wouldn't awaken his victims. Shortly afterwards, DM recalled hearing one of her roommates saying, "There's someone here." That could have been Zanna on her phone, because records showed she was on TikTok at about 4:12 a.m., according to the police affidavit. DM then opened her door twice within a short span of time, and the second time heard what sounded like crying coming from Zanna's room, and a male voice saying, "It's okay, I'm going to help you." At 4:17 a.m., a security camera nearby captured distorted audio of what sounded like a whimper and a loud thud, investigators said in court records. A dog is heard barking in the eerie stillness of the pre-dawn hours. According to the affidavit, when DM opened her door for the third time, she saw a figure clad in black clothing and a mask that covered the person's mouth and nose walking towards her. The masked intruder, whom the roommate did not recognize, walked past her and used the sliding glass door to exit. It is unknown if the killer even noticed her. Terrified, the girl locked herself in her room and did not come out for hours. She would later say she was frozen with fear. At 4:20 a.m., a white Hyundai Elantra was seen on the security camera fleeing the area at a high rate of speed on Palouse River Drive, which eventually leads over state lines to Pullman, Washington. This wasn't a house in the middle of nowhere. It's on a quiet, residential street in a nice neighborhood. This happened in flyover country, not New York City or Los Angeles or the south side of Chicago. It is almost impossible to imagine a scenario in which you would feel more safe. There were six people inside the house, including Ethan, who was a big guy, and yet four of them ended up brutally murdered by a phantom in the night.
Spooky? Do you think I'm spooky?
I told my mom I thought I saw a werewolf. And my mom believed me.
Oh, like I'm putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay! Serious crap!
You think these people were eaten?
My dog stepped on a bee.
Unidentified flying objects. I think that fits the description pretty well.
Haunted in the remains.
He is dead. But he has the power to move. And kill.
She was bludgeoned to death with an axe.
A giant hairy creature, part ape, part man.
When I stand on the mountain and I say, do it, it gets done. If it don't get done, then I'll move on it. And that's the last thing in the world you want me to do.
And this is the Spookies Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Spookies Podcast.
I'm your host, Nancy Grice.
And this is Dr. Grande. Ha-ha! No, this is Michael.
And I'm Stephanie.
And we are back! Happy New Year. Welcome to 2023. We're living in the future.
You sound so excited about this new year.
Well, I think some people thought we had abandoned the podcast. We didn't abandon the podcast. Who do you think we are, Tony Black? No one is going to get that reference. No one. Except Adam. Whatever. Anyway, Stephanie and I have a big announcement to make. We have an official mascot for the podcast, and she has a name.
Yes.
Tell our listeners all about it, Stephanie, so I don't have to.
What, about our mascot or her name?
Both.
We adopted the most adorable black kitty known to man. Her name is Clary Starling.
Yeah.
In honor of Silence of the Lambs.
No one's going to get that reference either.
What, Clary Starling?
No, that's an old movie.
Stop moving away from the microphone.
I'm doing it. I'm going.
You're doing this.
I'm leaning in.
Hey.
I'm leaning in a way like.
So annoying when David, I have to edit this.
I'm leaning in like David Zaslav wants me to do.
No, he wants me to lean back because women don't watch superheroes. We want to watch things called MILFs are dating or some shits. I don't know. It's cringe. MILF moms. That's what it's called.
I know what women do watch. True crime. And for our first case back, I wanted to talk about something scary. I wanted to get back to basics. I felt that some of the episodes we did last fall were a little too far-fetched and juvenile. And I love the Goatman, but it's...
Does that mean we're not getting homunculus?
No, we are. We're getting homunculus after we're done with this massive case.
Okay.
Nothing is scarier than human evil. That's what keeps most of us up at night.
Mm-hmm.
Not supernatural monsters like the Goatman or Amber Heard. All right, Stephanie. Who or what are we talking about tonight?
We're talking about the Idaho student murders or Moscow murders.
Yes. The case the entire world is talking about. It is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot escape it. It has completely taken over the headlines.
Yeah.
And do you remember the first time you heard about this? Like
vaguely around Christmas time, and I didn't know what it was. I was actually asking you because I follow Brian Enten, who's a journalist on Twitter, and he was the one who was really following. He kind of first came on the scene, made a name for himself over the Gabby Petito case, and going down to Florida to basically hound Brian Laundrie's horrible parents. So that's why I was still following him. And he was talking about these murders of these co-eds in Moscow, Idaho. And I didn't know anything about it at the time. I was like, what? What is this? I actually don't follow breaking cases heavily the way other people do.
Well, I vaguely was aware of it because
So I was asking you and you're like, I don't know.
Well, it was weird because it was like Moscow, Idaho. And I'm like, the Russians have invaded Idaho.
Yeah,
like,
I think that was part of the confusion.
I just kept going like, Moscow.
Yeah. Like, why is this called Moscow? By the way, we can't figure that out.
Well, there's some debate about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people say it's because Russian immigrants founded the town. It was originally called like Paradise Hills or Valley or something like that. The other idea or the other origin story for the name is that it was Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's a bastardization.
I think that's probably the closest to the mark. That feels the truest to me. I have no idea. I'm just talking out of my ass right here.
Well, why do you think that this case has resonated with people? Is it just because they're, you know, young white people that were killed?
No, it's because, you know, there were 6 people in this house and 4 of them were murdered within the span of 15 minutes. And it was in a town where I guess a murder hadn't even been committed for like 10 years. But the other part is we hadn't heard of anything like this since like Ted Bundy went crazy and, you know, murdered all those girls in their home down in Florida.
Well, it's...
So it's similar to that in that regard. It reminded me of that, actually.
It's reminiscent of that sorority house that Bundy went in.
Yeah, where he just brutally attacks these poor people. And it's horrible. And there are survivors, but many died. And then, like, right after that, he goes after, a little girl.
Yeah, and that's what... was his undoing.
So that's, you know, that creates a lot of fear in a community where there's no crime and where something that's just unheard of and unspeakable. I mean, one murder would be one thing and that would be awful, right?
But it was a murder house.
But it was, you know, blood-soaked walls of young people and one's a guy. So that makes people feel really unsafe.
I believe this case has struck a chord with the public because it is rooted in a very basic fear.
Yeah.
That someone will break into your home at night and violently murder you.
Or your children when you send them off to somewhere you think is safe, right?
Yeah, I think the parents of the victims picked this place because it was one of the safest universities in mm-hmm. America. And who would have thought that with 6 people in a house, 4 of them would end up dead?
Yeah.
And one of them is a big... you know, guy. He's a big kid. But there.
And I think he worked. Didn't he work on a farm?
Or
it was like a winery. But I mean, he did. That means he's doing like labors and stuff. So he's, you know, he's a hard worker.
The other aspect of this is it feels like a crime from an older era of human existence.
Yes.
A time when strangers would just walk into your house late at night and slaughter an entire family.
Mm-hmm.
A time when we once feared the dark.
Back when serial homicides were called stranger killings.
This is another Hinterkaifeck or Villisca axe murders. Crimes so shocking and senseless that they seem more mythological than reality-based. And that's kind of the tightrope you walk with this case because it almost doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
It feels like a movie.
Yeah, it's like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah. It seems like something that would just not happen anymore.
Yeah.
Not in America. Not in middle America.
Not in flyover country, no.
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 I want to...
We kind of think of, like, if there's mass murders or massacres, we think of them in border town regions where there's a big gang element.
There's a cartel.
Cartel. We've heard of cartel houses where there's...
from a cartel.
Yeah, where the, you know, they've stuffed bodies into the walls and just disgusting things like that. Like, I think when people think of, like, you know, mass killings or really vicious and brutal killings, it's usually related to organized crime. It's not usually related to a single person, I think, in people's memories now. Because, you know, Bundy was so long ago, most people don't, you know, they're not walking around thinking, oh, you know, I could, might be some crazy person who's going to kill four people.
It's also the kind of thing you see with, like, cult murders, where
yeah.
a cult commits a murder or a group suicide.
Yeah.
Where a house, you know, like the Heaven's Gate cult.
And again, that's an older thing, too.
It's from the 90s.
It's from the 90s. You know, it's weird.
Ancient. Let me be clear, though. We are not here to solve the crime.
No.
Only speculating about what happened based on our research. While we are curious, like everyone else, I'm not solving shit on TikTok. I'm not even on TikTok. You know, TikTok has just completely permeated social media.
Yeah.
We live in a TikTokracy. It has become this obnoxious engine for spreading misinformation and targeted harassment.
Yeah.
And the discourse around this case is one of the things I find really fascinating about it. I'm not saying the case itself is not interesting. I'm just saying the discourse, it really pisses me off.
Same, same. I think, you know, when the Chinese government knows that their app is dangerous and they only let their citizens use it for a certain amount of time and they have like a curfew for it, it's just set to like shut off after so many hours. But we're the guinea pigs for this app. The rest of the world are the guinea pigs for their surveillance app because that's what they're using it for.
Yeah.
To get data on the rest of the
world. You will not pry TikTok from the hands of white women, Stephanie, so don't even try.
They need to stop dancing on TikTok, doing the creepy shimmies, and then like talking about their trauma at the same time and then shimmying around. Fucking stop it. It's gross. You're grossing me out, man.
Now,
you're giving me the heebie-jeebies.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you how wonderful the victims were. That's what Dateline is for. Go to Dateline. I don't know the victims.
Yeah.
And neither do you. And it doesn't matter whether they were a bunch of doe-eyed urchins on their way to Sunday Bible camp or spoiled Gen Z brats. They were the victims of a horrendous crime.
Mm-hmm.
A grisly and savage murder. We are always on the sides of the victims. Always. We don't victim blame on this.
Yeah. Podcast. Yeah. They didn't deserve what happened to them. The same goes for the women slain by Jack the Ripper or the pig farmer killer. There are no perfect victims. There are no perfect people.
Exactly. Having said that, based on everything I have seen and read, the victims were good people. They mm-hmm. were your typical American college kids.
Yeah.
They were real people, real lives, lives cut tragically short by some maniac. And it is incredibly sad, shocking, and heartbreaking. And I think people are waking up to the fact that what happened to these kids could have happened to any of us in the middle of the night. We just don't know. This is going to be a two-parter. I can hear the groans already. Part one will focus on the murders and all the bullshit with the true crime sleuths.
Yeah.
Part two will focus on the suspect and our theories about what really happened that night. Okay, Stephanie, take it away.
On Sunday, November 13th, 2022, four University of Idaho students were found dead in the off-campus home where three of the victims lived in Moscow, Idaho. They had been brutally stabbed to death. The victims are identified as Ethan Chapin, 20, of Conway, Washington, Madison Mogan, 21, of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Zana Kernodle, 20, of Avondale, Arizona, and Kaylee Gonsalves, 21, of Rathdrum, Idaho. No calls to 911 were made until 11:58 a.m., many hours after the early morning murder spree. At that time, a call was made from inside the residence, from the cell phone of one of the surviving students who lived at the house, asking for help for an unconscious person.
The two survivors, one of whom reportedly suffered from PTSD before the murders,
mm-hmm.
has been harassed by web sleuths for taking too long to call the police, in their opinion.
Yeah.
They are being blamed for the death of their roommates. Some have even speculated they were in cahoots with the killer. These assholes online targeted a trauma survivor. So gross, so infuriating. They can kindly fuck off.
The other thing they did is they would say things like, she should have been stabbed instead.
Yeah.
And they've doxed her. They've put her information out there online, which is why we will not speak of the survivors by name, or just the initials from the affidavit. You would think in a world where we have so much more understanding of trauma and how it affects the brain, that people would be more aware of why it may have taken longer than an hour. I can't even imagine what she saw and how, look, the brain will do all kinds of crazy things to protect itself, right? If you see a madman walking towards you covered in blood and you're scared out of your goddamn mind, you're going to go into a state of shock, right?
Well, she told the police that. She said she was frozen with fear.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will never, ever, ever judge any survivor, right? Of tragedy.
You don't
like
know
that.
How you would react right. in that situation.
You can think all you want. Oh, I would have done this. I would have done that. You honestly do not know until you are faced with a traumatic experience. You don't know. You just don't know. And it is not fair to blame her at all, because she's going to have survivor's guilt. She's going to have added trauma onto this. And I don't know how her life is going to be impacted negatively. You know, it's not going to be good after this. And so I think, you know, my heart is also with the survivors as well as the families of the victims, because they're experiencing something singular, and the only people who can ever understand that are other people who have survived things like this.
Well,
unfortunately,
the people going after the survivors are, to my mind, more like the killer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Somebody had said, you know, I don't want to think there are people like this guy out there, but then I see these comments directed at the survivors and I'm like, oh, there's a bunch of nuts out there.
Yeah. And to me, I'm like, how dare you? Honestly, how dare they? These fuckers on TikTok, these bitches out there. No, fuck them. Fuck these fucking women out there, because it's mostly women, by the way.
Are we being overtly harsh on the dancing TikTok lunatics?
No, fuck them. You have no right. You have no right to go after these two girls who have survived something horrific that none of us could ever fathom how bad that is. I can just tell you just personally, when Michael's father collapsed in front of us and his heart stopped beating, that everything was like in slow motion to me. Michael was frozen in a state of shock, and I was on the phone with 911, and I'm just moving. It felt like I was in slow water. So that's someone I know, right? And that's someone having an acute...
Well, and I'm also known for being very calm
under pressure.
Yeah.
But... that's what I mean when, you know, I always thought I would be better under that kind of pressure. You just don't fucking know. You don't know until you're thrown into it. You know, combat veterans will tell you the same thing. You just don't know. You don't know how you're going to react or behave.
I just want to say that much has been made of DM. We call her mm-hmm. DM. The roommate's delay in calling the police. What has been overlooked, though, however, is that her descriptions of the height, physique, and bushy eyebrows of the killer all help locate a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't talking about the suspect in this episode, but we will reference the suspect. I'm not saying his name yet.
Yeah, we'll get to that fucker.
Yeah. When the police did arrive, they found all four victims dead. There was blood everywhere. Now, there have been pictures shared online of outside the house, specifically the part that is connected to Zanna's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in these pictures what appears to be blood seeping out of the walls. And I have actually seen the photos. I didn't go looking for them. I just stumbled upon them researching this case. But it is absolutely chilling.
Was that on Twitter? Because you showed it to me.
I think it might have been. But the thing is, first of all, what kind of place is this that...
How shitty is this fucking house that, like, the walls are so thin?
And also, how brutal is the stabbings that...
Yeah! Yeah, because, I mean, it's Idaho, so it's going to get cold as shit there. It should have a lot of insulation.
And it was snowing, you know? It was covered in snow.
So it went through. It looks like it's like where the drywall and the outside siding or whatever mm-hmm. meets the concrete, the foundation. That's where it's, like, seeping out of, and I'm just horrified. It's horrifying. Investigators who have been on the job for 20, even 30 years, said they have never seen anything like this, one police source would later say.
Can you imagine sending your kids away to college? You pick one of the safest college towns and universities in America, and then they end up brutally murdered by some maniac in a mask. Mm-hmm. You know, that's gotta be just, I don't even know. I mean, I can't speak for the parents, but it's going to take a long time to come to terms with that.
What happened. And they may never come to terms with that. A latent shoe print believed to be from the intruder was found outside DM's room, mm-hmm. according to the police. And according to the autopsy report, none of the victims showed signs of sexual assault. All four deaths were deemed homicide by stabbing. Initially, the only clue to the murder scene was a knife sheath found at the crime scene. It belongs to a fixed blade knife. The sheath was later processed and had K-Bar, USMC, and the United States Marine Corps Eagle Globe, an anchor insignia stamped on the outside of it.
So why the Rambo-style K-Bar knife? Why didn't a killer just buy some generic knife at Target? It almost seems to me like he's trying to create a signature weapon.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weapon of choice for incels, apparently.
A series of unsettling and disturbing events preceded the murders several weeks before the massacre in the house. Kaylee had confided to her friends that someone was stalking her, and Buddy, a neighbor's 12-year-old Australian Shepherd, was found skinned and filleted on October 21st, 2022, 3 miles from the home where the four University of Idaho students were later slaughtered.
There is also body cam footage showing police responding to noise complaints at the victim's party house on several occasions in the months leading up to the murders. Now, this is just my personal theory, but I believe the killer was the one who filed the complaints.
Mm-hmm.
He was testing the fences, like the raptors in Jurassic Park. He wanted to know how long it would take for the police to arrive. Again, just my theory. I also suspect that the killer had been inside the house before the murders and knew the entire layout. Now, some people have said that he could have gone on Zillow and looked it up.
Yeah, yeah, you know? That is one way, especially if that house.
I think he might have made friends with the dog, though.
Yeah.
Because he tucks the dog away in a room.
Yeah.
So it won't wake anybody up. Or
do we know the breed of the dog that they have?
I don't remember. I looked it up. But apparently the dog has been taken care of. One of the family members
has the dog.
Yeah. It's also possible, and I think this is very likely, even though we're kind of following the official police version that he entered the home, is that he was already in the house when they got home. He was waiting on them.
I think that is highly probable, considering that he was monitoring, or we think that he was monitoring their movements.
Yeah, we're going to get to that next time, but yeah.
Yeah.
You'll see. He has been doing this for months.
Mm-hmm. Confusion and unease spread throughout the community following the Idaho student murders. The city of Moscow is a small, quaint college town surrounded by nature, majestic snow-capped mountains, perfect for biking, hiking, and camping. Before the murders, the city of Moscow was known as a relatively peaceful place, and now a killer was on the loose in a town where no murders had occurred in nearly 10 years. In the aftermath of the killings, investigators initially said that there was no risk to the community. 3 days later, however, Moscow Police Chief James Fry said, "We cannot say that there is no threat to the community."
And this is one of the problems, the mixed messaging. Mm-hmm. This is what stirs fear in the community. And I think the police overall did a great job in this case.
Right.
But whoever's in charge of public relations and messaging, they fucked up really bad.
They did. And from Brian Enten's reporting, he talked about, because he was there, he went there, and people were really scared. People were locking all of their doors. They were leaving lights on at night. They weren't staying at home. So a lot of the kids had actually left early for holiday break. Mm-hmm. They just want to get the fuck out of there, and I totally understand that. So there was a lot of unease and fear because there was a killer on the loose, and they didn't know who this person was.
And they didn't know who it was, and it could be one of them. It could be somebody in the community.
Yeah, it could have been one of their friends and neighbors or someone they went to school with.
Spoiler alert, it turns out to be an outsider, but we'll get to that next time.
Mm-hmm.
On November 30th, grieving families and classmates gathered at the University of Idaho for a candlelight vigil. Conspiracy theorists and YouTube clickbait grifters would later claim the killer was secretly in attendance. Now, we hate those people. We hate the clickbait YouTube grifters, but he might have been there.
I'd say it's likely.
Yeah.
I'd say it's likely.
It's known for killers to return or to go to visuals and
Right. They want to relive that high of murder. Yeah. That's their thing. For months, frustration, fear, and mystery surrounded the infamous Idaho stabbing murders. The parents of the victims demanded swift justice. And in the absence of an arrest, conspiracy theories about the killing spread like wildfire on TikTok and other social media platforms. In that information vacuum, web sleuths suspected the two roommates who survived the attack, a food truck owner who was seen on an interactive live stream with the victims on the night of, and even a university professor was accused of planning the killing by a self-proclaimed psychic on TikTok. The professor has since sought legal action for defamation.
Imagine waking up one day and discovering there is a TikTok account devoted entirely to accusing you of being a murderer.
And not any kind of murderer.
Yeah, a quadruple homicide.
Yeah, yeah.
There is no excuse for this nonsense. So don't even try to defend it. If I get emails trying to defend it, I'm going to make fun of you. You know the 90s phone psychic, Miss Cleo? She would have loved TikTok. It would have been a perfect platform for all her bullshit.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know how they would have, like, you know, made the monies, but they would have figured out a way to get all those coins. Because back in the day, it was like, call 1-900.
They would have made money.
Psychic friends and Madame Cleo.
I'm just saying if she would have lived to see it. She died of cancer, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. This is the point where interest in the case ceases being true crime and becomes a grotesque reality show.
True crime should be a prism through which we address a host of societal concerns, including race, gender, class, and mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
What started as harmless speculation spiraled into an online witch hunt, resulting in harassment, malicious slander, and doxing, baseless accusations, and rampant hysteria. This all coincided with this insipid groomer moral panic that was sweeping the nation, and still is.
Do you think that was part of it? That was really a big part of it?
No, but they both are spread through the same engine, which is TikTok.
Twitter and TikTok.
Yeah. All these web sleuths and TikTok lunatics were unwittingly impeding the investigation of a grisly quadruple homicide. And the police stated as much.
Yeah.
They were out there saying, you're going to fuck up the case.
You're going to fuck up the case. And you know, shit like this could let a killer go free, by the way.
Well, shit like this is what gives true crime a bad name.
Yeah.
I think it was around the time this was happening. There was, you know, the election was going on.
The midterm election.
Yeah. It was the runoff with Herschel Walker.
Oh, right. In Georgia.
Yeah. And his son, Herschel Walker, is this Republican candidate, MAGA candidate.
Who has severe CTE, is diagnosed with schizophrenia, and has held his now ex-wife and son at gunpoint.
Yeah, he's a nutcase.
Yeah.
But this is going to connect back to what we're talking about. So his son is on TikTok. His son is a conservative, black, gay teenager.
I don't think he's out, though.
He's gay.
He's definitely gay. But I don't think he's out.
And I followed an account on Twitter that's called Patriot Takes, which is sort of like libs of TikTok, except it makes fun of conservatives.
It was when that, what was the website before... One true social media platform. I don't know. I think it was called, was it
Parlor Takes.
Parlor.
But now it's Patriot Takes.
Now it's Patriot Takes. Yeah.
Anyway, they kept posting this kid, and people love this kid, even though he's
a hypocrite.
He's anti-gay and gay.
Yeah.
And a Christian. And
he's closeted, and anti, he's hating gays.
And anti-abortion, okay?
Yeah. Fuck this guy.
But all the, you know, wine mom crowd.
It's because he started shitting on his dad.
It's also because he's gay. And you got to defend gay people.
Even if they're closeted, even if they're attacking other gay people. And I don't agree with that. I'm with Dan Savage.
I had no problem with him being gay. I had a problem with him being a hypocrite.
Yes.
I found him grotesque.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said as much in the replies. And then some jackass responded to me because I called him a horrible person. I said, this kid's a horrible person, just like his dad.
Yeah.
And this jackass responded to me and he's like, well, you're a true crime podcaster. You're the definition of horrible. And it's a leftist person, but is kind of probably one of those leftists who listens to Joe Rogan. But he's also in MMA, which, by the way, I think
I have no idea why the wokes love MMA so much, because it's everywhere.
I think MMA is disgusting.
Yeah, it's
gross. I think real world violence is disgusting. I love horror movies. I love violent video games. All that shit. Real world violence, not into it.
Right. Not real. Cool.
He was also a crypto bro. crypto bro, but a socialist. But it got me thinking about true crime, and it got me thinking about, you know, am I doing a bad thing? And I don't think so, because I think we try to get to what could have stopped this?
Yeah.
What could have prevented this? That's what interests me. I'm not interested in glorifying murderers. And you will see when we talk about the suspect next time, we're not glorifying him.
No.
We try to find why he did the things he did. We try to find empathy where it should be, because I think you can't just look at people as just pure evil and pure good.
Well, I think it's why that the Dahmer show was actually really good.
But that was problematic, Stephanie.
Right. But it's actually really good because it's asking those same questions.
I understand there's people as this that love TikTok. Okay, that's fine. But
if you want to waste 8 hours of your life on TikTok, be my guest.
Well, you can do that with all social media.
I know, but TikTok will suck you in, and you'll be bored doing it at the same time.
I get on YouTube, and I go down rabbit holes, and that is a bad place, too. It is that's where brains... There's people on YouTube who are defending the killer, by the way.
Of course.
And attacking the roommates.
Of course.
But it is the job of law enforcement. Not us,
yeah,
or YouTube, or Gen Z TikTok kids to solve crimes.
I think it's different. This is the only caveat I will make to this, right? Is when it's a cold case, and the cops aren't even looking at it, and nobody's looking at the crime, like the Golden State serial killer, which was solved by kind of a group of people, not just...
But she was kind of a journalist.
But she was a journalist, yes. The author, I can't think of her name, I'm sorry. Patton Oswalt's... deceased wife. I'm sorry that I'm referring to her as someone's wife, but I just cannot think of her very Irish last name.
Well, she's Patton Oswalt's woman, so.
But anyway, you know, there are cases like that, or missing persons
case. She has a thing for hobbits.
There's missing persons cases like Daniel Robinson, who is still missing in Arizona. Those types of things, I think, can be beneficial for people looking into that and trying to bring awareness. There is a difference to bringing awareness to a case or looking into a cold case and trying to help solve that for the people that were involved versus an active murder case right now or an active missing persons case. And you could be muddying the waters for a future prosecution because we don't know what the cops know. You know, they're not going to tell everybody the information they have because they need to prosecute someone at the end of the day. They need to take this information and put someone, the guilty party, behind bars.
Also, I just want to say, white women, please stop with all the cringy dancing on TikTok.
I know.
It is fine if you get enjoyment out of TikTok, but the dancing is embarrassing.
It's cringe. It's so cringe.
You cannot escape it on social media. Mm-hmm. Now it's on YouTube. Now they're making YouTube. They're turning it into TikTok. And it's torture.
On December 7th, 2022... police announced they are interested in speaking with the driver of a white 2011 to 2013 Hyundai Elantra, spotted near the crime scene at the time of the murders. As New Year's approached, people were starting to lose hope that the murders would be solved. It seemed like another one of those cases, such as the Delphi situation or the JonBenet killing, that would remain a mystery for months, maybe years, or even decades to come.
But then, on Friday the 30th of December, out of nowhere, just 6 weeks after the murder, the police arrested someone. That someone was 28-year-old Brian Koberger. And who exactly is Brian Koberger? He kind of looks like Jake Gyllenhaal's evil doppelganger.
He was a PhD student studying criminology and forensics at Washington State University in Pullman, Washington. Koberger lived about 8 miles from King Road House, where the four victims were massacred.
And that's the end of part one. Next time, we are going to dive into Koberger's background. If there is one word that captures him perfectly, it is creepy. I want to remind everyone, though, before we go, that Brian Koberger is innocent until proven guilty. We are still a nation of laws. Even after Trump, we still are a nation of laws. Amazing. The police obviously believe he is the guy. Me and Stephanie think he's the guy.
Yeah.
And next time, we will lay out all the evidence against him. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you could, go on Apple, rate us, give us 5 stars. If you enjoyed this podcast, if not, just don't say anything. Don't say shit.
And if you want some behind the scenes content,
please consider subscribing to our Patreon.
Mm-hmm. We are patreon.com/thespookiespodcast. And you can find us on many social platforms like Twitter and Instagram.
And late.
But not really TikTok.
No, I'm not on TikTok.
I mean, no, I think we have a username on TikTok. I just don't think we use it.
Looking for me on TikTok and you will find jack shit.
There's like nothing. It's just a username.
Later this week, we're going to release, I think, the meat of the story, which is we're going to get into Brian Kohlberger. And to be honest, this is what interests me about this case, because he's an interesting guy. Okay, I think, in my opinion, he's a monster, but he's interesting. And I also think he's a tragic figure in some ways. Not saying he's innocent or he doesn't deserve to be arrested. I think they got the killer.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to get in. We're going to lay out all the evidence against him. We're going to lay out why we think he's guilty. And we're going to try to come up with a motive for what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some strong disagreements with some of the people out there saying he's not an incel. I think he was an incel.
So. Same.
And that'll be coming later this week. But until next time, I hope you guys have a great week.
Enjoy, and bye-bye.